House come to order if members can take their seats.
This budget is a huge job maker, and the number one solution to economic insecurity is a job.
Hungry children can't learn, and it's our responsibility to try to help.
Equality and opportunity.
I believe most people are here because they want to do some good.
Welcome to a brand new installment of Capital Ideas. It's the podcast where members of the Majority House Democratic Caucus in the Washington State House of Representatives sit down at the Capitol and talk about ideas. We've got some good ones today. If the Washington State operating budget were part of the Marvel Universe, today's episode of Capital Ideas might be called The Origin Story. We're about to hear from Representative Steve Bergquist, Vice Chair of the House Appropriations Committee, in a conversation recorded just a few days before the House and Senate both voted to approve that nearly $70 billion two-year spending plan. It was impossible to know at that point just what the final numbers would be for any given program because negotiations were still ongoing. So instead of the what, we talked about the how. How do lawmakers go from right before point A to the final product, a document better than 1,000 pages long that spells out to the penny just what Washington is going to invest in everything from public schools and affordable housing to public safety, behavioral health, and wildfire prevention and suppression? Steve is a veteran representative from the 11th Legislative District in King County. For context, think Renton, Tukwila, Kennedale, South Center Mall, and the Jimi Hendrix Memorial. We recorded this on April 20th, 2023, and here it is. Today's guest on Capital Ideas is Representative Steve Bergquist from the 11th District up in King County. It's great to have you here, Steve. It's been several years since the last time we talked in front of microphones. So welcome to Capital Ideas.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
There's all kinds of things I want to ask you about because it has been several years since we've been able to do this. One thing is that the last time we talked, I think we concentrated mostly on education and we talked about tennis a little bit, as I recall. But for the last few years, you've had a key role on the House Appropriations Committee, which is the committee that is responsible for not only assembling, but also kind of doing the philosophical background work to put together the House version of the state operating budget. Being that you are a vice chair, I would love to be able to hear about that process, which is coming to a head as we talk with 4 days left in the session.
Yeah, no, thank you, Dan. I originally ran for the legislature because I was a high school social studies teacher, and I still am. The McCleary ruling had just come down that we needed to fully fund basic education for our students, and I looked at the roster of legislators. There was not one single educator that was currently in the classroom representing our students and our families for our education system. It really inspired me to run for office and be a voice for our students and our educators here in the legislature. And the last 5 years, I've played that role as vice chair on budget, really looking at the education issues, our early learning, K-12 and higher education policies and funding for our state on the House's side.
Do you see your role on the Appropriations Committee as being sort of the watchdog on education funding issues?
I would definitely agree with that. Obviously, I had mentors in our former Majority Leader, Pat Sullivan, had been on the team with me and had been our education lead for many years. It's big shoes to fill, and this is kind of my first year in that role for our caucus. It's been a big challenge as we have huge education priorities spanning early learning for our preschool program for lower-income families that we are working towards full entitlement in the next 4 years. We have a Working Connections child care system that has grown in significance for our families and made it so affordable for our working families to have access to childcare so that they can get into the workforce. And in our K-12 system, special education has been the topic, probably the number one priority of both the House and the Senate this year. And it's been an interesting process as we've worked through all of our policy decisions to figure out a funding plan that we should be unveiling here in the next couple of days. And then in higher ed, our students, especially our students with the median family income below 70%, should have access to 100% tuition. And we keep growing towards that number. And, you know, in this budget, I hope we can make further advancements to provide college access to more students tuition free.
Let me switch gears for a second here. Because you are a representative from the 11th District, in addition to the various hats that you wear down here, your main hat is State Representative Steve Berquist from the 11th District. What kind of legislation have you been working on that maybe grew out of the fact that you represent these particular 150,000 constituents and they've come to you and said, Steve, here's what we want you to do and why we want you to do it?
Well, and this year in particular, I appreciate that question. I've been working on legislation around our college-bound scholarship. We have fairly high poverty school districts in our 11th district. Renton, Tukwila, and Kent are the three major school districts that are in my district, with between 50 and 70% free lunch qualifications. And those are students that in this college-bound program receive full tuition in-state for 4 years at any institution of their choice. That opportunity is something that's been a program I've been fighting to enhance my entire legislative career. I was very well in tune with the first cohort of those students that were in my classroom at Lindbergh High School. That was before I started in the legislature. And so that program, I saw the opportunity to take advantage of that, the way that the students who probably wouldn't have otherwise thought that college was an option, make that a choice early in their high school career, which got them to successfully graduate and move on to that next step in their career choice.
What are the kinds of legislation? Transportation has certainly got to be a key issue in every district, certainly on the west side. Community safety is something that's been very high on the list of priorities this session and in past sessions, and housing.
I really do enjoy reaching out to my community and understanding what the issues that are of high priority. I do biweekly newsletters that get actually a lot of responses. I have surveys in each one of those newsletters that really do try to tap into becoming more aware of our community needs and desires. And public safety is a high priority for my constituents. The more we can do to make our communities feel safe, the better off we are, because people do expect to be able to feel safe in their neighborhoods and be able to have their kids walk to school. The transportation budget has been working towards, I think we passed quite a few years ago, a package that has expanded 405. We're finally seeing the finishing touches in the next couple of years here. That should be finishing up, and hopefully that will alleviate some of the traffic headaches that my community faces every morning and every afternoon during their commute.
What else?
Well, I have a bill that I was working on this year. I had been talking to some of the students in my community. We used to have a Renton Youth Council. We had a Vibrant Teens for Tukwila Council, both of which went away during the pandemic. Trying to bring back student voice, as I think our students want to enhance their voice and find ways to be more civically engaged. Some of those voices are not being heard because they're not given a platform. And so I had a bill this year that would create the legislative district youth councils in every single legislative district in coordination with the school board directors. Now over half of our school boards in our state have student members. And so working together with the student school board directors and these youth councils, we could have a cohesive voice for youth that I think can reach more of our students in the community, and also then have a path to reach the Legislative Youth Advisory Council, which has 24 students on it for our state. I always felt like I was pretty lucky when I'd have an 11th district student on the state youth council, but that doesn't always happen because there's 49 legislative districts and only 20 to 24 members. And so my goal was to provide that voice in a more significant way for our students. I hope we can find a path for it next session.
Did it seem to get traction, but maybe just it wasn't able to fight its way to the top in what's been a pretty busy year?
Yeah, quite a few bills moving around, and this was a new idea. We were successful in having bipartisan support for the bill out of the committee. Took a few amendments as we were moving through the process, and I think it's just something that we can continue working forward on, and hopefully next year will be the year.
We started off talking about the budget, and then kind of veered off from there. And I want to move back in that direction now. And just to put context, this is 4 days until the 2023 legislative session gavels itself out of existence. And the last thing that needs to be done is to have total agreement between the House and Senate and the governor on what the operating budget for the state is going to look like for the next 2 years. Without getting too deep into the weeds, what is the process that you have been a part of to put together this spending plan?
Well, it's more than I realized when I was elected to the legislature. I didn't really understand that process coming in, and even until you're in the room, working through the process, it's hard, even as another member that's not on the committee, to truly understand how this all works. But it really does start with the governor releasing their proposed budget in December. And there's forecasts that lead up to that. And so you're always kind of paying attention. But the first attempt at a budget is done by the governor in mid-December. What we do at that point is kind of understand what the governor's decisions were. They do a lot of research on the proposals from the different agencies. So if the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, for example, has requests, they may have 100 requests and maybe 30 of them get into the budget. The Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction does the same thing. So all these agencies come to the governor with their goals for the next biennium and with arguments to support why those are needed ideas. And so the governor then proposes that vetted list of options for the legislature to then take on. And at that point, the start of session, early January, we sit down and get a overview of every single decision that the governor made in the budget.
And that's a thick document.
Yeah, you're talking over 1,000 pages. And so every agency has different decisions that they made. We get analysis from our staff. I mean, that's the biggest part is that we can't do it by ourselves. We have an amazing group of individuals that pore over all of these decisions in each agency and let us know the reality of what we can afford and what is available, what's possible for the agencies. And we then make decisions based on, you know, what our financial situation is. It doesn't always end up that everything the governor had in their budget is funded. And some of the things that aren't in there, we have ideas about how to maybe improve upon the budget. So that first month of January is really just spent reviewing the governor's moves. And then February, looking at the next level of budget options as we move into creating our own budget for the House in preparation for negotiations with the Senate.
Certainly the budget that the House produces as opposed to the governor's budget is based on hundreds of bills that pass that each propose some sort of new policy or a change to existing policy. The fact is, a lot of them cost money. And I guess that's the point at which you really have to start making tough decisions.
Yeah, definitely. You know, the governor, when they propose their budget, has one vote they have to get. It's pretty easy to get one vote because you're the one vote. In the legislature, for the House side, we have 98 members and obviously, we need at least 50 votes, but we really are trying to make sure that everybody has input as we move through the process. And it's long hours, by the way. I mean, we pretty much, I moved down here for the session because starting every Monday morning, we're usually in here at 8 or 8:30. Generally speaking, most days we aren't heading out until at least 8 or 9 at night, even longer days sometimes as we get deeper into session.
Once February's over with, the session has been going on for maybe half the time. You're getting a pretty good idea by then of which policy bills that are floating around in the dozen policy committees are going to pass and which ones are going to cost money, because once they've come out of Committee A, if they have a fiscal impact on the state, they come to the Appropriations Committee for another hearing. That's the point, I suspect, at which it really does start to get both detailed and tough, and also you maybe start to see a clearer picture of what's real. And then factor in the fact that there's a revenue forecast that tells you, here's how much money a lot of smart people think that is going to be at your disposal.
Yeah, so the end of February, early March is when we start taking a look at those larger cost policy bills that come to Appropriations Committee. We have a couple weeks to kind of vet those bills for the cost. We do less of the policy work, more of the dollar work. So if you send something to us that costs $300 million, we don't necessarily always find that out before it comes to us, because the changes to the bill may add cost or lower cost. And you know, that bill might have come out, they expected it to cost $20 million. And we find out, well, $300 million, those are two different numbers. And we have to true up maybe the goals of the policy committee with the finances available for that policy. And as we look at our priorities, make those decisions as we pass it along to the Rules Committee for floor consideration.
So let's say you come up with the budget, with the House version of the budget. You propose it to your 97 colleagues there on the House floor. People argue about it a lot, and it eventually passes. That's when the Senate budget comes into play, because they've been doing exactly the same thing over there across the rotunda. What is the process like in the rooms where the House and Senate budget teams are trying to come up with one budget that matches every period, every comma, every letter, every dollar, every penny is exactly the same so that we can get out of here on time?
You nailed it. It's a tough dance. And, you know, kind of going back slightly a little bit, the step prior to that process, before, you know, we get our budget out and agreed to by the House, the final week right before that, we have another revenue forecast. And so we've been developing a budget based on kind of our best guess of what our forecast will be, how much money should be available for making great policy decisions. And of course, things change all the way through, but that forecast is a big, big moment. This is my fifth year, and the other 4 years, each of those forecasts have been rosy. So they've all shown that there was more money than had been expected in the prior forecast. This year was a little bit different. This year we had about $1 billion shortfall over the four-year budget cycle that we budget for. And until about a week prior, that wasn't the expectation. I think people were expecting a little bit of a neutral forecast. And so it was a real difficult last week there prepping as we saw that there may be a little gloomier forecast than we were anticipating. We had to make decisions, right? Yeah. We said, oh, well, you know, we love all these great things, but the dollars don't add up.
I'll ask you the same question that every reporter who hangs around the state capitol asks every member that they run into at this time of year, which is, are we getting out of here on time? And the reason that we wouldn't would be the budget, obviously. And I do want to point out that since the Democrats won their majority in the Senate, along with the longstanding majority in the House, there hasn't been a special session. When there was a divided legislature, it was the norm to not finish on time. And now we've been getting out on time. Are we going to do that again this year?
Well, I would hope so. My first 5 years here, I think I had about 10 special sessions, pretty close to it. And these last 5 years, and this is year six, where we have, knock on wood, not had that need. It is helpful to be able to get out on time with an agreement that is a huge step forward for our state. And I would hope that maintains. That's a high priority for the House and the Senate, I think.
Caucus started 1 minute ago. I know that as a key player over there in the House Democratic Caucus, you need to be in caucus. But before I let you go, I want to ask what we haven't talked about that you might like to get in here in case we don't do another one of these for the next couple of years.
You know, it's a great opportunity to be a legislator and represent our community. I take that heavy weight on my shoulders, and I feel that as I talk to my constituents and tuck my kids into bed at night. I really do try to always put their best interests at heart and make decisions that I think are the best for my community and our state. And I truly do appreciate the role that I'm in and appreciate the impact that our House Democratic values have had on our state during my tenure.
And I appreciate you, Representative Steve Berquist, for giving me this much time during a period of the session in which you've got a whole lot of people pulling on your coat. I do have to turn you loose now, but Steve, thank you very much. This has been Capital Ideas, and once again, Steve, thank you for coming by.
Thank you, Dan.
As Paul Harvey used to say, now you know the rest of the story. If you found today's episode interesting, you're exactly the kind of listener who ought to subscribe to Capital Ideas. That's pretty easy to do. Just drop by the House Democratic Caucus website at housedemocrats.wa.gov and hit the media button at the top of the page or sign up via Apple, Spotify, or one of the other usual places. You'll never miss another Capital Ideas. What we talk about is your state government, and what happens here matters. I'm Dan Frizzell for the Washington State House Democrats, putting people first since 1889. Thanks for your time.